Well, Jim Marr's with us. His book, The Trillion Dollar Conspiracy, How the New World Order, Man-Made Diseases, Zombie Banks Are Destroying America. We'll be back with Jim in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we've got Jim Marr tonight. He is a world-winning journalist. He has more than 30 years' experience with Texas newspapers. He has written several best-selling books. We're talking now about the Trillion Dollar Conspiracy. Jim Marr's back after what, bouncing along the skies there, Jim?
Yes, I had quite an adventure today. I was supposed to leave Nashville about 5 o'clock and supposed to get home about 6:30. And instead, I've been home less than an hour.
Oh, jeez.
But yeah. I can't blame the airlines. I can't blame the Homeland Security. This was weather related.
And you know what? If you're going to fly, that's going to happen.
It's going to happen. But the thing is, it happened on both ends. It happened in Nashville. We got delayed. And then they shut down Dallas-Fort Worth International because of the weather.
Frustrated. Well, I'm glad you're back on terra firma, safe and sound, Jim.
You bet. Thank you. And it's always great to be with you and your wide awake, non-zombie listeners.
But now, talking about zombies, you say that there are a lot of people out there, not our listeners, of course, who are zombies. What do you mean by that?
Well, okay. First off, you know, there's a number of banks that their liabilities outweigh their assets. So basically they're bankrupt, but they've been propped up by TARP money, right?
Mm-hmm.
Government
That's right.
Funds. So they're dead, but they're still going through the motions. So they've been tagged as zombie banks. Okay. Right. You've heard that, I'm sure.
Sure.
Okay, George, but here's the deal. As a nation, we owe, depending on who you want to listen to, between $12 and $15 trillion, okay? And it's been reliably estimated that if every man, woman, and child in this country was to liquidate every asset they've got, we couldn't come up with but maybe $9 trillion. We're a zombie nation. We're just dead and going through the motions. And it doesn't have to be that way. That's one of my messages, because we still have a country with great resources. We still got a lot of resources. We've got the Bakken oil field that stretches up through the upper Midwest and into Canada. Hadn't even been tapped, okay? And it's full of good oil. There was no reason to go digging at the deepest trench at the mouth of the Mississippi River.
They've got reserves there to last hundreds of years. Hundreds.
Exactly. And that's if we want to keep burning this fuel.
Yeah, exactly.
Oil, you know, and there's no reason to do that because, well, you know, water's going to be a problem in the future. I'm sure you've had people on talking about how water's getting scarce and how the big multinational corporations are gaining control over water supplies, Coca-Cola, Perrier. All right. And so, and we have a problem with energy. Hey, we've got an East Coast, a West Coast, a Gulf Coast. We've got tides. If the tides stop, we're all in trouble anyway. So why don't they build big desalination plants on the coast, and when those tides roll in, they spin turbines, we get energy, plus we get potable water. I mean, there are some simple explanations and simple solutions for all of our problems, but it's not happening. Why? Because of the self-styled globalist international financiers, the same clique of people, many belonging to the same families who created hard-nosed socialism in Russia, which came to be known as communism. When it threatened to go to get out of hand, then they created national socialism in Germany with their little army intelligence agent, Adolf Hitler. And then when he threatened to get out of hand, they had to have a world war.
Yep. They all go rogue, don't they?
Yeah. Well, you know, here's an interesting point. Why did Hitler get out of hand? Because he made the same mistake or tried the same thing that Abraham Lincoln did and John F. Kennedy did. The two presidents in American history who tried to issue government-issued non-interest-bearing money. Okay? And that's what really got him in trouble, because it was those international bankers who had created him in the first place. Let me tell you what Benjamin Franklin once wrote.
Okay.
He said the colonies would gladly have borne the little tax on tea and other matters had it not been that England took away from the colonies their money, which created unemployment and dissatisfaction. The colonies were issuing colonial script, and it was just based on the goods and services available, and America was prospering, but it was cutting out those bankers of the Bank of
England.
That's
right.
Okay? And so they twisted the arm of the British government, had them in the arm of King George, and he passed a law that said you could, you know, made it illegal to use colonial script. You had to use Bank of England notes, which charged interest. Then Abraham Lincoln came along, and he said one of the greatest prerogatives of government is the is to be able to issue money, but they hadn't been doing that, so he issued greenbacks to finance the war between the states.
How soon did he get assassinated after he did that?
Well, about 2 years. Okay. He started doing that at the beginning of the war, and of course he was assassinated about a month or so after the South, or at least Robert E. Lee's army, had surrendered at Appomattox. And then in June of 1963, John F. Kennedy, who had been waging a very quiet, under-the-table war with the Federal Reserve System through his Treasury Secretary, issued $4.2 billion in currency with red ink on it that, instead of saying Federal Reserve Note, said United States Note. He issued it through the Treasury Department. We didn't have to pay interest on it. And I don't think that it's sheer coincidence that both Kennedy and Lincoln were shot in the head in public.
Now, the fact that he did that, Kennedy did that, what was he trying to accomplish? What did he want to do? Get rid of the feds, the Federal Reserve?
Yes. Federal Reserve is neither federal, nor does it have any reserves.
Exactly.
It is 12 banks that were created through an act of Congress in 1913, when most of Congress was, it was on Christmas Eve, when most of them were away, and they rammed it through as a banking reform bill. And one of the things they agreed upon at their secret meeting at Jekyll Island was never to call it a central bank. And you know what? Through most of my life, you never heard the Federal Reserve System referred to as a central bank. And then all of a sudden, somewhere in maybe the late 80s, I noticed on the radio, they would come on and say, the central bank today announced interest rates will be blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, they just started calling it central bank. You know, all of a sudden, we had it. And now Hitler did the same thing. When he took over, Germany was prostrate. It was economically wrecked. We've all heard the stories of how they had to carry wheelbarrows of money just to buy a loaf of bread.
Yeah.
Hyperinflation. Half the population was out of work. Okay? And that was he took over in early 1933. By 1935, 2 years later, Germany was prospering. Why? Because he put everybody to work on big work projects like the Autobahn.
Sure.
And then paid them through government-issued script.
Was he getting ready at that time, Jim, with his war machine? Were they working, like, in factories,
sure.
Building things?
Okay. Oh, yeah. That was part of it, too, was rearmament. Okay? They had been just totally stripped and denuded of any military after World War One and the atrocious Versailles Treaty. And anyone who knew anything. And then they were soaked by the Dawes Plan, the Young Plan. These were J.P. Morgan guys that went over there and saw to it that, and the Germans saw this as us trying to take away their industry, which it was. But the main thing is that within 2 years, he had turned Germany around, and they were prospering because he was issuing government-issued, non-interest-bearing money. And if we would simply, at the very least, audit the Fed and find out where all our money went. I'm sure you remember last year, Mr. Bernanke was called before Congress and said, well, you sent trillions of U.S. tax dollars overseas to prop up these foreign banks. Exactly what banks got that money? What did they give us?
And he said, I'm not telling you. Right?
He said, I'm not going to tell you. That's a private thing. Hey, this is robbery on a massive scale, not to mention treason. And what are we doing about it? Nothing. You and I are talking about it, and your wide awake listeners are listening to this. But what else is happening? Nothing much. And if something does happen, it doesn't get reported on September the 12th, 2009, an estimated 2 million Americans marched on Washington, okay, to protest the Obama tax giveaways and the bailouts. And at that time, his proposed health plan, which is now passed, 2 million Americans marching on Washington. And hardly anybody except those who were there knows it happened, because the 5 corporations that control everything we see and hear didn't report on it.
Well, what I find fascinating, Jim, is, you know, it started with the Bush administration in the $350 billion in TARP money. And then the Obama administration picked up the load and kept spending even more. But they both did this. It's almost as if they were both told, you got to do it this way. I can't believe that Barack Obama or George Bush, when he was president, understood the economics so well where they knew that this was going to work. Somebody someplace, Jim, had to tell them, this is what you guys are going to do.
Exactly. Well, let's go back to, again, to Mr. Bernanke. When he was asked about the Great Depression of the 1930s, he said, yeah, we did it. We're sorry.
Yeah.
They've admitted that the stock market crash of the 1929 was a put-up job, you know?
In order to get the Federal Reserve in the back door?
No, they already had the Federal Reserve
already locked in.
This was just to knock out all the little guys. You know, it's amazing. And as we just mentioned, 2009, when they asked what happened to all these trillions of dollars, he says, well, you know, first said, I don't know. And then he said, well, I can't tell you. It's amazing. Now, you're right. You're absolutely right. That can't be happening just by accident.
There's no way.
No way.
And there's no way they come into office knowing what they're doing economically. They just can't do it.
No, they know. See, that's the whole thing. But what the problem is, they keep us distracted. They keep us distracted by liberal, conservative, Republican, Democrat.
While they're doing their weaving.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. In fact, if you go back, you'll find that starting with the George Herbert Walker Bush administration, every member of his cabinet, with the exception of Dan Quayle, who couldn't spell potato, and his old friend Jim Baker.
Or tomato.
Yeah. They were all members of the Council on Foreign Relations.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, okay. Tell me, this
is Wall Street, basically.
This economic collapse, what have they accomplished so far other than crushing the dreams of so many Americans? What have they done here, Jim?
That's what they've done, is they're setting us up for a really big fall, because the United States of America is a free and free nation and a republic, has been the biggest stumbling block to their plans for what they themselves have referred to. George Herbert Walker Bush referred to it. Adolf Hitler referred to it. A new world order. And the new world order is going to be a worldwide socialist state broken into 3 economic blocks. You can read all about this. It was all foretold in 1948 by a British Fabian socialist by the name of Eric Arthur Blair. And he wrote a book, and he transposed the numbers of 1948 and called it 1984. And he put his pen name on there, George Orwell. And he told exactly what the plans were. They're going to have Oceania, East Asiana, and Asiana and East Asiana. Oceania, Asiana, East Asiana. 3 blocks that divided up the world. And 2 of the blocks would be at war with each other, or at conflict with each other at all times. And the mastermind behind it all was Goldman, okay? A guy named Goldman, who they never could quite find and never did get caught. But he was the scourge. He was the real boogeyman, okay? And then when Oceania and East Asiana would somehow reach a truce or some kind of peace, then they would turn and they'd be fighting with Asiana, all right? Now, in the real world of today, they've got the European Union, and they're trying desperately to create the North American Union, and then pretty quickly we'll have the Asian Union, and that's going to be easy enough because the Asian nations are pretty much pyramids of power anyway, so all you got to do is buy up the guys at the top,
that's
or
right.
put them on the board, and then you got them. And that's, in fact, I'm sure you remember the documentary maker, the big producer, Aaron Russo.
Oh, yeah. Who's, God rest his soul.
Exactly. Where is he now? We really need him. And, you know, he said, he tells the story of sitting down with Nicholas Rockefeller, and he finally popped the question. He said, well, you know, what are you guys after? What's the game plan? And he claims that Nicholas Rockefeller told him, well, we're going to microchip the population, and we're going to have the wealthy people control the world.
That's right. His big hit was America, Freedom to Fascism.
Exactly. And he understood what was going on. It's just, I don't know. It's just absolutely amazing. But again, we're not dealing with Republicans or Democrats. We're dealing with the rich party.
Yeah, that's true. The elitists.
Yeah, exactly.
Who or what, Jim? What do they want? You know, I've asked this to so many people. I mean, is this
boredom?
They want to
control the world.
Is it just a game for them now? They have nothing else to do. They wake up in the morning. They don't have any bills to pay. Everything's taken care of. They don't have to go to work because they already have their money. So what do they want?
Well, this is what's so amazing is a lot of people, you know, who are distracted by the corporate media that these same people own, they just, all they see is, well, it's just corporate greed. They're just greedy. But as you so well pointed out, they don't need the money. They got all the money in the world anyway. Okay?
They just make it anyway if they need it.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, it's not about money, but only tangentially. It's about power.
Yes.
Control. And, of course, money generally equates with power and control. So if you want power and control, it certainly doesn't hurt to have a bunch of money. But, again, let me go back. Let me point out. 1989, 1993, we had the George Herbert Bush administration. It was Republican. Everybody except Quayle Baker and Secretary Lewis Sullivan were members of the Council on Foreign Relations. Okay, so this is democracy. We vote. So we voted in the Democratic administration, Bill Clinton, from 93 to 2000. Every single member of his cabinet, except for Secretary of Defense William Perry, was Council on Foreign Relations. Oh, well, okay, so we turn around, we vote in, or rather in 2000, George W. Bush was selected, okay? And let's look at his cabinet. Dick Cheney, Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, Donald Rumsfeld, Robert Gates, Ling Chao, Christine Whitman, all members of the Council
all
on Foreign Relations. All of them.
All of them.
But now, in November of 2008, we get Barack Hussein Obama, okay? Free a change, you can believe them. Oops, let's look at his cabinet. Oops, Robert Gates is still there.
The same people.
Janet Napolitano, CFR, Bill Richardson, CFR, Susan Rice, CFR, Attorney Senior Security Advisor James Jones, CFR, Timothy Geithner, CFR, Larry Summers, CFR. Hey, Council on Foreign Relations. Folks, it's nothing but the rich party, okay?
Same thing.
And you can be a liberal, you can be a conservative, you can be a Democrat, you can be a Republican. It doesn't matter. The rich party is who's in power, and they're going to stay in power because they own the media.
That's the big story.
Do
you believe this quote by Lord Acton? Power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Great men are almost always bad men. Do you believe that?
Unfortunately, that does seem to be true. I don't know.
I think he's
why
right.
That is, other than I guess if you start getting a little bit of power, you know, Hitler did this, Stalin did this, you know, everybody's done this. Soon as have you ever been to Berchtesgaden?
I have not.
Have not. Okay. Well, it's Hitler's little mountaintop retreat over in Bavaria. And when you get up at the top there where the eagle's nest is, you can look out over like four countries.
Let's hold that story when we come right back. Jim Marrs, our special guest, his work, The $1 trillion Conspiracy, will be back. Indeed it is, with our special guest tonight, Jim Marrs. Well, this weekend I could swear I saw M from the James Bond series. I would have bet money it was her. I don't even know who she is, actually, or if she's still alive, but it sure looked like M. I'll be back in a moment with Jim Marrs as we talk about the $1 trillion conspiracy on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, Jim, what was the story up there in Bavaria, in those Alps?
Well, I could have ended that a lot quicker. It's just that when you get to heights of power, When you get, you don't have to worry about money, and you got all this power and people, grovel at you and all like that, it's very easy to fall victim to megalomania, right?
Sure.
By the way, I'm not sure this is what you were asking, but the woman who played the M in the James Bond movies was that very fine British actress, Judy Dench.
Yes. I could swear I met her this weekend.
He thought she was there.
I'm pretty sure.
Well, all right. To continue with our conversation, it's bad enough they want power, but they want us dead, okay?
Yeah.
If that sounds extreme, consider in my new book, The Trillion-Dollar Conspiracy, I have a whole section on depopulation efforts, and we talk about the 1974 United National Security Study Memorandum known as the Kissinger Report, where they basically said that population growth, especially in third world countries, represents a threat, a serious threat to U.S. security. And this study was adopted as official policy in 1975 by our only unelected president, Gerald Ford. Now, what does that mean? Well, in a 1981 interview, the former ambassador of South Vietnam, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Maxwell Taylor, a seriously high-standing member of the Council on Foreign Relations, advocated, he said, in the next century, well, that's now, he said, we've got to reduce population, and this will be done mostly in the third world, by limited wars, disease, and starvation. Well, Afghanistan, Iraq, we got limited wars, disease, we got AIDS just decimating Africa, and starvation. And as we all know, unfortunately, there are millions of people around the world right now, as we're all listening, fat, sat, and sassy, that are starving to death. All right? Prince Philip in England, who is part of this group, part of these globalists, says human population growth is probably the single most serious long-term threat to survival. If it isn't controlled voluntarily, it will be controlled involuntarily by an increase in disease, starvation, and war. Oops, he must have been reading the same script as Michael Taylor. Now, I'm sure there are those who would say, well, yeah, wait, all he's doing is being philosophical, and if we don't change our ways, this is what we're going to be facing. Folks, listen to later. In later years, he mused, in the event that I am reincarnated, I would like to return as a deadly virus in order to contribute yep. something to solve overpopulation. Folks, these people, they're not content with taking our money. They're not content with wrecking our country. They want to kill you.
You've got a chapter on dead microbiologists. We've been talking yeah. about that for years, Jim. Explain.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure everybody thinks I just write a book and they just publish it. No. That's not the way it works, folks. I have to go through some very hard-nosed editors, and I have to go through what is known as the legal vetting process. And they got lawyers that look at everything. How do you know this? Can you prove this? Is this source? Who said
sure.
this? Is that a credible
source? Your
source?
Stuff's explosive, James.
So when you read this stuff, don't think that I just lay awake at night making this stuff up. This is all very well-grounded stuff. And when I went and started researching the 100-plus microbiologists who have all met an untimely death over about the past 8 to 10 years, I knew that that sounds so horrendous and so unimaginable that my hard-nosed editors were going to say, well, now, wait a minute, how do we know this? Can you prove this? So I went ahead and I double-checked up on every one of these, and I listed more than 100 microbiologists, the very people who would understand what disease really is, and furthermore, would be able to tell us whether it was a real pandemic or a phony pandemic, and more so, could tell us, well, hey, here's an antidote, here's the cure. And sure enough, I came out with 25 pages listing all of the book, listing all these people. And the editor said, that's 25 pages. We can't spend all that. And I agreed with him. So that all the names have been cut out, but I do mention it, and I give the websites where you can go, and you can count them, and you can read the accounts of each of these persons' death. And it's absolutely amazing. There they are. Now, who's doing that? The very people who could tell us. And, of course, that leads us. Let's just go back 1 year, George.
Okay.
What were we all concerned about? Swine flu. That's oh, my God.
Which we said on this program, it's not going to be a pandemic. It's a push to get you a vaccine. Listen to us.
Exactly. They wanted to give you the vaccine. Are you ready for this? During the whole stretch of the Bush administration, the head of the director of the Centers for Disease Control was Dr. Julie Gerberding. Okay, mm-hmm. She was the one heading the group telling us, you got to get the vaccine. Oh, get the vaccine, protect you, protect your family. Oops, wait a minute, this vaccine didn't do real good, so go back and get the second vaccine.
Yeah.
Okay, we got to get that one. All right, soon as Bush was out of office, Dr. Julie, she resigned as director of the Centers of Disease Control and is now become president of Merck.
No way.
Vaccine division.
Making zillions.
Making buku bucks. Now, folks, that's another thing. If we're going to pass a few more laws, let's pass a law that says no one who is in the public health service, who is supposed to be guarding the public health, can then leave and go take a lucrative job at a pharmaceutical.
Isn't it the same with those with the FDA who end up working for another company?
Same law needs to apply to them. See, we have the best government that money can buy.
Yes, we do. Tell me about Royal Raymond Reif.
This is an amazing story. I'll try to make it quick. In the 20s, Dr. Royal Raymond Reif was working to develop a microscope. And he finally succeeded in a very complicated type microscope that was a backlit microscope. Unfortunately, at the same time he developed his backlit microscope, they were developing the electron microscope, which of course is in widespread use today. But the electron microscope bombards the specimen with electrons, so when you view it, you can actually see it better, but it's dead, okay? It ain't going to change. It's not going to be anything else other than what you see under the electron microscope. Dr. Reif figured out that one-celled organisms, viruses, bacteria, they have life cycles, and they evolve just like every other living creature. And so he was able, through his backlit microscope, to see how these organisms changed and thrived. And he also figured out that they had a specific vibration, all right, radio frequency, if you will, an electromagnetic frequency, and they vibrated at that frequency. So he found out that if you bombarded, say, a certain bacteria that had a certain frequency, say, I don't know, 10,000 hertz, and you bombarded it with 20,000 hertz, it overloaded it, and that organism burst.
Yep. It killed the cell. It killed the bad cell.
Okay? So he, over the next several years, he began to work and figure out the frequencies for illnesses. Okay? So if you have bladder infection and you know what the frequency are, you turn that frequency and your bladder infection clears up. And so he began to work with that. In the mid-30s, they took 17 cancer patients who had been given up on by medical science. They said, sorry, they're terminal. Nothing we can do about it. And he cured all 17. Cured. Didn't make them just better, not just in remission. He cured them.
They didn't like that, though, Jim.
Nope. The head of the AMA, who was a Rockefeller man, went to him and said, hey, this is great. So we're going to get a lock on this. We're going to charge people, you know, out the wazoo. We're going to make $1 million. And Dr. Reif, said, well, no, we need to give this to the public. And, you know, we're going to cure everybody. And, you know, and so over the Rockefeller medical monopoly, and that goes back, took it over and began to change our homeopathic herbal-based medicines into petroleum-based synthetics, okay, they started pulling their strings. And they even had doctors who had been with Reif, pictured with him, claim they never knew him. They raided his laboratories. They claimed he was a fraud, and yet they never would test his stuff. And when they did, the tests were skewed against him. And they finally drove him into poverty and drank.
Yeah, and they belittled him and everything. Do you have some storms out there, Jimmy? I'm starting to hear some crackling on your lines.
It may be. We're still having some lightning and thunder going on around here. I apologize. I don't know what to do.
That's okay. No, we'll...
You're going to have to send a message upstairs.
What I'm going to do at the top of the hour in just a few minutes, we'll have Tommy reconnect with you, make sure that holds, and then we'll go as long as we can, all right?
Okay, sounds good.
All right, now, with this conspiracy, these man-made diseases, zombies, first of all, I agree with you. I think they want the world's population reduced. The figure I've heard that I don't necessarily agree with is 500 million from the 6.5 billion we have right now. Mm-hmm. But there's no doubt they want what they think is a controllable world population.
Yes.
And of course,
they call it sustainable.
Yeah. And of course, of the 500 million left on the planet, a lot of them will be them, right?
Well, it's going to be a little bit of them and then a whole lot of people. You know, they're going to have somebody to mow the lawn and cook.
Well, they'll keep a few of them around.
Yeah. You know, they got to have people to take care of stuff. But see, there is another reason why they've got to destroy America. America has up till now has been very prosperous. We've put almost everybody has gone through the school system. And although they dumbed it down and we're still, you know, the American public can read or write, and we've all gotten used to indoor plumbing, and we've all gotten used to, you know, plentiful food, and so we're a problem. They got to get rid of us now, and they're doing it through the vaccines, the chemtrails, genetically modified foods. They're still wondering what happened to the bees. The bees start disappearing when the genetically modified foods came out.
Absolutely. I'm going to have Tommy, by the way, while I'm talking to you, Jim, call your backup phone.
Okay.
And let's, as soon as it rings, pick it up, and then I'll flip you over there.
Okay.
And let's see how that holds for us here. We've got Jim Mars, and we're going to reconnect with him in just a second. Jim, when you put together the work, though, the trillion-dollar conspiracy, what made you do this?
Hello?
Yeah. I can hear you. You there?
I'm here.
All right, gotcha. Let's see if that'll hold up for a little bit. What line you on? There you go.
The one you just called.
There you go. Okay, much better. Much better. Okay, my question was, what made you write the trillion-dollar conspiracy, Jim?
Well, actually, it's kind of a follow-on to books. The people, and like you, you've kept up with me. We've talked off and on over the years. First, there's Rule by Secrecy. I gave the history of these secretive societies, these globalists, if you will, and then traced them all the way back through history to show that this isn't just some recent development. There's been a clique of people, would-be world conquerors, world controllers, who've tried to rule over us ever since the get-go. In fact, historians will tell you that all of Western civilization has been one big westward movement from the Fertile Crescent in Mesopotamia, which is now Iraq, which we can't go to unless you join the army.
Yeah.
And then it moved northward through the Caucasus Mountain regions and then to Eastern Europe, Western Europe, southward to Palestine, Egypt, Greece, Rome, Western Europe, British Isles, into the east coast of America, and during the 19th century, of course, we spread from the east coast to the west coast of the United States. Now, why do they keep moving? Because in the history, the historians, again, there's no big secrets. They were trying to escape religious and political tyranny. But the problem is now, George, as you, of all people, are aware of, is there's no place to run now.
No.
So that led to the rise of the Fourth Reich. And the fact that after World War II, after they'd contained communism and had defeated national socialism in Germany, but see, their problem was not really with national socialism. It was really with the economy of Germany. Here's Winston Churchill's own words, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You must understand that this war is not against Hitler or national socialism, but against the strength of the German people, which must be smashed once and for all, regardless of whether it's in the hands of Hitler or a Jesuit priest. In other words, they had to smash the economic prosperity of Germany because they were showing what could happen to a hardworking people who refused to deal in interest-bearing notes, which created indebtedness for everyone, drove everybody into debt so they could control them.
Now, that's not to say, though, that Hitler didn't go over the deep edge with his Holocaust and everything else. Yeah.
No, that's not to defend Hitler at all. See, you know, once you get up at a certain level, you know, no matter what, how good you may start off, you tend to develop megalomania. But let me point out here, and again, don't take this as any kind of defense of Hitler, because there's no defense for that. Okay?
All right.
But it's an explanation. number one, he didn't seize power. The German people gave it to him, all right, because he came along at a time when they were in such distress. He says, give me the power, and I will straighten things out. And boom, off they went. In fact, you might recall the musical Sound of Music. And there's a rousing song in there by the German youth where they sing, tomorrow belongs to me, okay? Because this was, they were imbued with the idea of change you can believe in.
Could he have done this without a war, Jim? Could he have gotten their economy going and everything else without attacking?
Yes, he could have. Because, yes, although a great part of the prosperity was building up a giant war machine, that did not necessarily mean he had to unleash it, right?
That's right.
But, of course, anybody who had read Mein Kampf should have known that he, way back in the 20s, when he wrote Mein Kampf or My Struggle, which was his little Bible, and everybody read it. You had to read it. If you're a good Nazi, you had to read that book. And in that book, he made it very plain that while he didn't really have a real quarrel with the British people, the Russians, on the other hand, were subhumans taking up too much territory, and it was his divine right to move the Reich in eastward into Russia, and so they could take advantage of the fields and the land there. You know, Lebensraum is what they call it, living room, so they could have more room to grow.
And that helped, though. That ended up being his kiss of death, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Again, you know, I'm not defending Hitler, but what I'd like to point out, too, though, is that what resulted in the Holocaust was actually fomented in the United States. It was called eugenics. All right, and this was started in the late 1800s right here in the United States. In fact, California.
Really?
Was the first state, yeah, to pass eugenics laws. If you didn't have the right blood and if you weren't the right type, then you were subject to castration, and non-reproduction. It's amazing. And this was supported by Americans all the way up to and including a Supreme Court Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes. And it all sounded kind of good about, well, we're going to try to purify the race. You know, we're going to try to get the good people, let the good people have it. And we got to get rid of some of the lower orders of people. And there was a big support for this. And this is what Hitler got. But when he took charge in Germany, then he was in such command, such he had such power, he actually put it into practice. And they started euthanizing people. And first it was the criminals, you know, capital punishment, and then it was the undesirables and mentally defective. Well, we just get rid of them. And then, you know, ultimately ended up, well, we're also going to take care of the Jews and the gypsies and I know one of my best friends years ago was the medical examiner in Fort Worth, Texas, and he still had his tattoo on his arm from Dachau, and he was Polish. And he had become a doctor. He was one of the most accomplished musicians I've ever heard. And I asked him, I said, well, you're not Jewish. And he said, no. I said, well, why were you in the concentration camp? He said, because I was an intellectual. I knew something. And that's where it goes to when you let somebody have absolute power. And this is why I'm hollering, screaming right now and trying to tell people to read my book, The $1 Trillion Conspiracy, read The Rise of the Fourth Reich, so that when 2012 comes and our economy is even in worse shambles and we have environmental disasters to deal with and they put somebody forward and say, here, give me the power, I'll take care of this. Don't fall for it.
All right, you keep that phone plugged in, Jim, because it sounds good. And when we come back, tell us what you mean by the video generation and what's going on with them. And then eventually we'll take phone calls with Jim Mars right here on Coast to Coast AM.